I closed up shop, got the support of all of my clients, and I packed up my bag and bike box, and away I went for the next 10 years traveling around the world out of a backpack and a bike box, and went on that professional triathlon journey. And man, was it ever a journey, and I never regret that decision for sure.
Hello, and welcome to the March 8th, 2024 edition of the TriDoc Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Sankoff, the TriDoc, an emergency physician, triathlon coach, and multiple Ironman finisher, coming to you from beautiful, sunny Denver, Colorado. If you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, then you know that the whole reason that it exists is to bring you measured and even-handed reviews of the science behind the claims that are being made by various manufacturers or supporters of all manners of device, supplements, and all the other stuff that is aggressively advertised to triathletes and endurance athletes, promising to help them train, race, or recover better than they would be able to without them. A little over 3 years ago, in February of 2021, in episode 59, we're now at episode 140, I did exactly such a review when I looked at the merits of continuous glucose monitoring. This was a technology that was just getting off the ground for non-diabetics, and the main player in the world of athletics at that time was a startup called Super Sapiens, who would have had you believe that knowing your glucose level on a minute-by-minute basis was the key to unlocking your performance as an endurance athlete. At that time, my assessment was pretty simple. If you had a functioning pancreas, Super Sapiens was not offering you anything that you really needed or didn't already know. My overall feeling was pretty much just because you can measure something doesn't mean that you should, and it certainly doesn't mean that it is worth measuring or that it will be a useful metric to know. Over the subsequent years, I watched with some dismay as more and more people bought into the hype that Super Sapiens and other copycat manufacturers that came out after it were selling. Gradually, though, I started to see something else, and that was people giving up on the tech, because much as I had suggested when I first discussed it, people thought that the numbers, while interesting, didn't really bring them anything useful, didn't teach them anything that they really needed to know, they didn't know what to do with the numbers, and they didn't really see that they were truly actionable in any meaningful way. And so it came as no surprise to me anyways, when last week, when Super Sapiens announced, without nearly as much fanfare as when they came onto the scene 3 years ago, that they were going out of business and closing up shop. Ostensibly, the reasons given for this decision was that the company just couldn't overcome the regulatory hurdles that was keeping them out of the North American market. That was something that they saw as a necessary move for them to achieve sustainable and long-lasting growth. To this, I have two things to say. First, thank goodness, for once, the FDA did its job, protecting American consumers from a product that served no real purpose except to deprive customers of their hard-earned money. And second, baloney. The population of the areas where Super Sapiens was available without restrictions numbers in the hundreds of millions, billions if you include the subcontinent. There is no way that being shut out of North America's paltry 400 or so million was the linchpin to their success or failure, and if it was, well, that was a pretty poor business plan. I think the reality here is that they were selling something that people initially bought because they thought it was cool, and then they realized that, in fact, you know what? Wasn't really worth the amount of money they were spending, because just like I said 3 years ago, the product simply was not providing them with anything that they really needed or could even act upon. Now, Super Sapiens isn't the only product that I have reviewed over the years that has been relegated to the dust heap of snake oil type innovations in tech. Does anyone out there remember, or is anyone using, the GO2 or the AeroFit? How about the core temperature sensor? That one might still have some adherence. The point is, a lot of these things start out as ideas that are maybe only partially thought out. And in the absence of any great evidence that they work in the real world, well, hey, it doesn't hurt to get these things out there and see what the market will bear. There's a lot of pressure to find the thing that will help you maximize your potential based on the time that you have available to dedicate to yourself. And these companies know that. My advice is always the same. There are no shortcuts. And if any of these things ever come close to delivering on the kinds of results that they are promising, well, you won't need the slick advertisements to hear about it. Being an early adopter is really only a ticket to being the fastest to lose your money. So do the smart thing. Invest in yourself with the time that you have. keep your money in your pocket until you know for sure that something is worth your investment. And if you want to be even more certain about something, send your questions to me so that we can look into the science and give you the answer that you want and need without bias. In the meantime, so long to Super Sapiens. You won't be missed, by me anyways. On the show today, the medical mailbag looks to answer a question from a listener who got wind of a new product coming down the pike. Alex in North Carolina wrote in to inquire about some advertising that he has seen about a new supplement called Plasmade. What is it, and how is it supposed to work, and more importantly, is there any evidence to support the claims of its makers? Coach Juliet Hawkman and I dig in deep, coming up in just a couple of minutes. Later, I am joined by Coach Marilyn Chakota. Marilyn is a former professional triathlete, a triathlon coach, and a co-host of the 99% podcast, and brings a really interesting background with her to the sport, as well as some fascinating perspectives on life and endurance sport. I know that you will enjoy the conversation, and that's coming up a little later on. And if all of that is not enough and you would like to hear even more of me and potentially even see my mug, for those of you who are signed up for the 70.3 in Coeur d'Alene this June, Ironman is going to be putting on a lunch and learn webinar next Wednesday all about mastering that course. And that's going to be at noon Pacific on the 13th of March. And it's going to be hosted by none other than me. I'll be talking about the course, race logistics, and more. So if you or anyone you know could benefit from that, use the link in this episode's show notes to sign up for that and be sure to tune in. Before I get going on the rest of the show, I want to take my customary moment to thank all of my Patreon supporters of this podcast who have decided that for about the price of a cup of coffee per month, they could sign up to support this program and in so doing, get access to bonus interviews and other segments that come out about every month or so. Those bonus episodes are available on a private feed for all of my subscribers. Plus, for North American supporters who sign up at the $10 per month level, they can receive a special thank you gift in the form of a BOCO TriDoc podcast running hat. So I hope that you'll visit my Patreon site today at patreon.com/TriDoc podcast to learn more about how you can become a supporter and to get access to those bonus episodes and maybe this cool gift as well. And as always, a thank you in advance just for considering. It's time again for the medical mailbag, that segment on the TriDoc podcast where I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Juliet Hawkman, another life sport coach, and we are going to answer a listener question that is somehow tied to health and fitness and, of course, the world of triathlon. Juliet, welcome back once again.
Great to be here, Jeff. Thank you.
Well, I understand we have a listener question, so why don't we get right to it? What is it this week?
Right. So this, as you said, this question comes from one of our listeners, and he is curious about this product called Plasmade. Plasmade makes basically products that fuel endurance athletes, and in particular, they make gels. And they have been getting a lot of attention recently because the likes of Blumenfeld and Gustav Eiden have been using them and have been promoting them. And what makes these gels unique is that they are made from a proprietary blend of pine bark extract that apparently supports inflammation balance and all these other bold claims on their website. So let's talk about Plasmade. What did you learn about it? Are these good products for age groupers and other endurance athletes? And tell us what you think.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing because I had never heard about it. I was really excited. I'm always excited when listeners reach out and ask me about a product I know nothing about because it's a open door, so we get a chance to really dig our intellectual chops into it. So my interns and I had a good time finding some research on this, and I had never heard of this pine bark extract. Specifically, it is extract from the maritime pine. Very exciting, and it has a Latin name. You remember it?
Pinus pinaster.
All right. So if you can somehow reduce this bark into some kind of soupy extract and put it into a gel pack, then you have essentially Plasmade. Now, Plasmade on their website has a lot of pretty bold statements, always a bit of a red flag. So let's just hear what they say. So straight from the website, unleash your full athletic potential with Plasmade, our science-backed and third-party certified adaptogen that promotes optimal blood health, boost your energy, increase your endurance, and support faster recovery to take your performance to the next level. Well, I'm sold. Sign me up. Sounds great. Right. They then go on to say plasmate stimulates increased production of endogenously produced nitric oxide, which helps to improve blood oxygen and nutrient flow, reduce inflammation, and promote energy and endurance while supporting fast and efficient recovery from normal short-term muscle soreness. Now, that sentence is the one I want to spend the most time on because it's interesting. We found evidence that supports some of the claims in there, but indisputably refutes some of the other stuff in there. So I'm just going to read it again and just sort of highlight what they're saying. They're saying that using this pine bark extract in gel form increased the production of endogenously produced nitric oxide, which helps to improve blood oxygen and nutrient flow, reduce inflammation, promote energy and endurance while supporting fast and efficient recovery from normal short-term muscle soreness. Julia, do you remember we have actually recommended a product in the past that was a nitric oxide supplier? Do you remember what that one was?
I do. Our much beloved beet juice.
Yes. Beetroot juice is a source of huge amounts of organic nitrates, which is fantastic because it is a precursor to nitric oxide. And when we reviewed it, we talked about the benefits of nitric oxide and how it does improve blood flow to muscle and improve oxygen delivery and fuel delivery. And it does seem to offer some benefits. However, at the time when we've talked about it, we've always said a couple of caveats. Number one, beetroot juice really only works for a short duration of time. And number two, it doesn't seem to work for women. Women have already a much higher amount of nitric oxide synthase in their bloodstream. They produce higher amounts of nitric oxide, so they don't seem to benefit quite as much from taking beetroot juice. However, as I've said previously, there is no harm in taking beetroot juice. It's really good for you. So if you want to try it, you should, because there's no downside. Okay, so let's talk about...
Doesn't this also contain another ingredient that we're really interested in?
It does. It does. Funny you should ask. Have we had this conversation? Have we met? No. So the really important stuff that is in the pine bark extract is a couple of different chemicals. One of them is called procyanidins, and the other one is polyphenolic acids, which, as you astutely are mentioning, it can be found in another product we've talked about, and that would be
the tart cherry juice.
Yes, tart cherry juice, of which we are both big fans. I'm going to come back to tart cherry juice because a lot of the benefits that we see with this plasmade product can be attributed to both of these chemicals, the procyanidins and the phenolic acids. And so the things that we liked about tart cherry juice, you will see again here. So let's just talk about a couple of studies. I want to first talk about a study that came out that was not peer-reviewed. It was not published in a journal, but rather it was published on an online blog. So this is something that one of my interns found. I have to applaud him for it because I don't know how he came up with it. But this product in plasmade is found under another name. It's the same thing. It's the extract of the same tree, but it's called Pycnogenol, which is Pycnogenol, and it's a registered trademark of a company in France, and they make this a similar kind of thing. And they did this study where they took 140 non-athletes and they randomized them into two groups. They put them into like a control group, or they put them into a group that was getting this extract, and they had them do these push-ups, sit-ups, and running exercises for 8 weeks. And they had a second group of athletes that they studied where they were looking specifically at triathletes, so very relevant to us. And they had them do a 750-meter swim, 20K bike, and a 5K run, so basically a sprint triathlon. They had 80 amateur triathletes, 40 men, 40 women. They actually had to do this triathlon 10 times in 30 days, which is very impressive.
Yeah, wow.
And they randomized these people into groups where half of them got placebo, half of them got this stuff, and they just sort of looked to see what happened. So in the first category of people who were the non-athletes doing these like push-ups, sit-ups, and running, what they found is that there was significant improvements in how many push-ups, sit-ups, and how long it took to run 2 miles. Like the improvements were insane. They were like double. Like you could do twice as many push-ups, twice as many sit-ups, and run twice as fast to do the 2 mile run. Does that sound too good to be true? It did to me. So, and then when you look at the, when you look at the second part, well, remember I told you they had 80 triathletes. They only published the results of 32 of them, all male. They just dropped the women altogether. And they don't tell us why. And basically what they found was the time for people to do the triathlons in the control group was about 89 minutes and 44 seconds. And in the study group, it was 96 minutes and 5 seconds. So a difference of 7 minutes. And that the group getting this pycnogenol, I can't even say it, they improved by almost 11 minutes over 30 days, whereas the control group improved by 4.5 minutes. So these are insane numbers. Now, again, not peer-reviewed, not evaluated by any other group, and not reproduced, as far as we could tell. We've not seen any other results that come close to this. But certainly intriguing, right? Because it makes you think, like, well, maybe this stuff is really a miracle. Maybe it really does work. So fortunately, we did find some papers that are actually published in good quality journals. And the first of these is really the best of them. And it's titled A Double-Blind Crossover Study to Examine the Effects of the Maritime Pine Extract on Exercise Performance and Post-Exercise Inflammation, Oxidative Stress, Muscle Soreness, and Damage. What a great title. The only thing they didn't tell you in the title is whether or not it worked or not. I'll save you that. I'll let you know. Basically, what they did is they took 20 healthy, regularly exercising college men, only men in this study. They randomly assigned them to the pine extract or placebo. They had them do these training over a period of time with a test before and after. They then gave them a washout period, had them cross over. So if they were in the placebo in the first group, they then took the stuff in the second evaluation and vice versa, which is, this kind of crossover study is a really, really high quality one because it means you're using the groups as controls for each other, but you're also using people as their own controls because people get the experiment and the placebo. It's a really good study design.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, I'll just cut right to the chase, which is there was no significant difference detected in either group in terms of how much oxygen. So their VO2 didn't change at all. There was no difference in performance measures such as power or time in the cycle ergometer test that they did. There was no significance detected in terms of oxidative stress at 24 hours, but in terms of all of the markers of distress. And there was also no difference in any of the markers of cellular breakdown, which would suggest that using this stuff didn't change how sore someone should be based on whether or not they had breakdown of muscle. They also did this really cool test where they applied this device onto people's legs and it would squeeze them to a set amount and the person would report how much pain they had and there was no difference. So people had exactly the same amount of muscle soreness. The only thing that this stuff seemed to affect was a particular marker of oxidative stress at 48 hours after the test, the cycle ergometer test. And this is a chemical called malonaldehyde. And that seemed to be less if you used this stuff versus if you didn't. That was it. That's it. And we found numerous other studies. Yeah, we found one other study that I think was positive. But just to be clear, this study was very clearly negative. No benefits on performance, no benefits on muscle soreness, no benefits on recovery. There was a benefit, however, on oxidative stress at 48 hours after the test. We did find another study that looked at the French product, pycnogenol, which is, again, the same thing. Mm-hmm. And they looked at the nitric oxide question. And they found evidence that, yes, taking this stuff does increase endogenous nitric oxide and does improve blood flow to your cells. They did not, however, find any improvement in performance, nor did they find any improvement in cellular markers that would suggest a decrease in muscle breakdown or an improvement in recovery. So if we go back to that sentence that I started off with,
right?
Plasmate stimulates increased production of endogenously produced nitric oxide. Yes, we found that, which helps to improve blood oxygen and nutrient flow. We found that as well. Reduce inflammation, sort of. Now, the reducing inflammation has nothing to do with the nitric oxide. It has to do instead with those polyphenolic compounds that we talked about for the tart cherry juice and we're going to come back to in a few minutes. They then go on to say, promote energy and endurance? Nope, absolutely not. We found evidence completely to the contrary. and supporting fast and efficient recovery from normal short-term muscle soreness. Well, we found nothing to suggest that there is any improvement using this material or using this pine bark extract that supports fast and efficient recovery, nor did we find anything that says that it diminishes muscle soreness. Now, to be fair, they don't say that it diminishes muscle soreness, but they suggest it in other places on their website. It's a product that has a lot of those red flags we talk about. When I talk about evaluating a product, I say you should go and look at their site. And do you remember the things that I always say, Juliet, to look for?
Well, if it's a super glitzy marketing site, if the studies are actually published with the links on the site, so you can go and look at them. If they're peer reviewed, as you commented, you just have to sort of go in with a little bit of a, like you're looking for them to be wrong.
Yeah, you have to be skeptical, right? I mean, because they're trying to sell you. Yeah, you have to be skeptical. It's buyer beware, right? And so I always say, if it's a glitzy website, that means they've put a lot of money into trying to distract you, so that you definitely want to pay attention to that. Heavy on endorsements, low on actual science. And this website is very big on endorsements. In fact, on their front page now, they have this announcement that they've teamed up with Santara Tech, which I wasn't familiar with, but you are, right, Juliet. What is Santara Tech?
Yeah, it basically looks like an incubator put together by Gustav Eden and Blumenfeld and their coach to test new products. It's all about promoting technology in the endurance sports space. And because those are such big names right now, basically any product that can be part of this incubator is going to get a huge lift because of these three individuals and how well they're known in our sport. And so they're testing bikes, they're testing wheels, they're testing nutrition, they're testing everything from glucose monitors to heart rate devices, the whole thing. And so it really benefits a company like Plasmade if they're associated with these guys. And of course, I'm sure that those three get a lot of free product and probably some cash as well for allowing
these. I'm sure they're getting cash. There. Absolutely. And that's the question, right? It's like, listen, more power to Eden and Blumenfeld, right? I mean, this is a short career. They might as well take as much as they can. And endorsements are harder 100%. And harder to come by. Why not create your own? So good for them for coming up with this. I'm sure that Santara Tech is really just a means for them to get companies like Plasmade to come to them with a chunk of change, and then they get the endorsement, they get Eden and Blumenfeld very prominently featured on the website as it is. And going back to what I talk about at the red flags, slick website, very heavy on endorsements, Mikey likes it type of stuff.
Right.
Big bold claims that sound too good to be true. And then no science, none. There's no science on this website whatsoever. They don't link to a single article. And it's interesting because we found some articles that actually back up some of the claims that they're making, just not to the degree that they are. So we talked about the importance of those polyphenolic compounds. And you and I have discussed tart cherry juice in the past, and we have actually recommended it. And I think it's important to talk about why, or distinguish why we like tart cherry juice and not this product, which also contains some of those same compounds. The main reason is tart cherry juice offers more than just the polyphenolic compounds for antioxidation. The big thing that we talked about when we reviewed tart cherry juice was the fact that it was very high in melatonin. And we both reviewed the papers that talked about how taking tart cherry juice at night really improved sleep. And you and I both have tried it, and I continue to feel like it's benefiting me if I take it. If I don't take it at night, I know it's, I realize the next morning that I forgot to take it. Are you continuing to see benefits from using it at
Absolutely.
Night?
Absolutely. I've actually been taking it religiously. The what is it, 2 ounces a day? Is that right? Whatever the prescribed amount is, a little bit in the morning, a little bit at night. And yeah, I'm almost kind of religious about it. I'm really enjoying its benefits. I'm definitely sleeping better than I have in the past.
Yeah. And we said at the time that even if the antioxidant stuff wasn't legit, we would try it for the sleep. And then after a month of trying it, both of us felt like we were sleeping better and we would stick with it. I take, like you said, the 2 ounces. I take an ounce in the morning and an ounce at night before bedtime. And I have enjoyed it. I also like the taste. And the big difference between this stuff and the Plasmade is the cost. So, right?
Well, and here's the other thing. Well, let's hold on the cost thing because it is remarkable, but I'm also just looking at the plasmid as a replacement. Even if you put all of the other supposed benefits aside and you're saying, oh, I'm going to use one of these plasmid gels just to fuel my workouts, it's only 26 calories. I mean, it's not even, most gels, as we know, are 100, 110, between 90 and 110 calories per serving, right? It's just got 26. So if it doesn't do all of the other things that it says it does, it's not even a good source of ride fuel at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's meant to be taken like 30 to 60 minutes before a workout and then 30 to 60 minutes after workouts. So you're supposed to be using two of these gel packs per workout. And that's where the cost really becomes a big deal. So tart cherry juice, I just re-upped. I got a 32-ounce bottle. It was like $20. So I'm paying about 60 cents, maybe 65 or 70 cents an ounce. So like $1.50 a day, let's say. These gel packs are $23. They are something like 36 or 35 Australian dollars. That doesn't include shipping. Right. They're $23 for 8 packs. So that's $23 for 4 workouts because you're supposed to take one before and one after, according to them. Yeah. I mean, you could, I'm sure, change that and do it. Even if it was 8 workouts, it's still $23 for 8 workouts. I mean, that is a very, very significant cost difference. And for benefits that you can find in other products, beet juice will get you to nitrates much cheaper. Tart cherry juice will get you the polyphenolic compounds and the bonus melatonins for significantly 100%. Less. I am not suggesting that plasmid doesn't do some of the things they claim. I want to be clear about that. We found evidence to support probably half the claims that they're making. I will say that they have on some of their product pages, like if I go to the actual page for one of these gel packs, then they start talking about things like improved immunity and improved sleep and improved focus. And that's, I'm not sure where that's coming from. It's not mentioned anywhere else. So we saw no evidence to support any of those things. I think those are just kind of sales technique things. They're picked out of thin air. Mm-hmm. But tart cherry juice, which is not heavily promoted, not heavily advertised because it's a lot cheaper, offers definite improvement in sleep recovery. We didn't find anything that says that it improves your endurance or your energy, but if you're sleeping better, probably going to be a little bit better off. And again, like I said, you want to combine beetroot juice with tart cherry juice, I think you're going to come out way ahead of using the plasmid, which is significantly more expensive. And there doesn't seem to be evidence that supports a lot of the claims that they're making. But, you know, tart cherry juice and beetroot juice so far don't have the heavyweights of Gustav Iden and Christian Blumenfeld just yet. We'll see.
Not yet. Never know.
Yeah.
All right. So it sounds like net-net, we're giving a thumbs down on plasmid.
Well, I want to be careful not to, like, this product is certainly better than a lot of the other products we've talked about because there is, you know, the pine bark extract is, I think, interesting. There is definitely evidence to support some of the claims. I think the plasmid itself is a product that I wouldn't buy. I wouldn't tell someone to buy because I think it's just too expensive. But does it do some of the things that they say it can do? Yeah, there's definitely research to say that. But I think based on the price and based on the fact that you can get the same chemicals in other forms with other things even better, like with the melatonins that you find with tart cherry juice, I would not say to go out and get this stuff. But I don't want to give it a definitive thumbs down because, like I said, there definitely is some intriguing evidence about this compound that suggests that it could actually work. And if somebody were to hand you one of these to try, I don't think you could go wrong, but I wouldn't become a customer myself.
Right. Got it. Okay. So with the if you've got a limited number of resources, you can find the same ingredients elsewhere for less money.
Yeah.
So, and probably more tastier too.
and more environmentally friendly because it won't have all these little gel packs that you got to dispose of. And honestly, I like the flavor of the tart cherry juice. So I'm going to stick with that. You keep coming back to it.
Sounds good.
Well, yep. Juliet, it's been another interesting conversation. Thanks for bringing that question to us. If you have a question for this segment on the podcast, The Medical Mailbag, I hope that you will send it to us. You can drop me an email at tri_doc@icloud.com, or you can join the private Facebook group on that platform for the TriDoc podcast. Just search TriDoc podcast, answer the 3 very easy questions I will grant you admittance. You can ask your question there or just join the conversation. Until the next time, Juliet, thank you once again. I look forward to our next conversation. Take care. We'll see you soon.
Thanks so much, Jeff. That was great.
My guest on the podcast today is another Canadian, and that, of course, brings me great amounts of joy. Marilyn Tekoda is a former professional triathlete. She is a triathlon coach and a co-host of the 99% podcast, a program that's dedicated to the big picture ways to get faster and develop as an athlete. Marilyn works with athletes all over the United States and globally. She has been involved in elite sports since she was 9 years old. And her resume includes not only the career stops that I have already mentioned, but also professional competition in cycling and, of all things, equestrian show jumping. She became a professional triathlete in 2003, racing to podium positions at Ironman events around the world, including a victory at Ironman Malaysia in 2004. Currently, she runs Marilyn Tekoda Coaching and is based out of Tucson, Arizona. And I'm really pleased to welcome her as a guest on the TriDoc podcast today. Welcome, Marilyn.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I feel honored.
Well, I have a whole bunch of questions. Number one, though, I have to know, equestrian show jumping. I have a couple of friends whose kids do this. I always marvel at it because I cannot believe how much it costs them to keep their kids doing it. That's number one. But number two, as an emergency physician living in Denver, where we have quite a bit of horseback riding in the area, I see some of the dramatic consequences of falling off a horse. But tell me, how did you get into equestrian show jumping? How far did you go with it? And why did you change?
Yeah, so it's a great sport for sure. And not a lot of people are familiar with it. So equestrian show jumping is that sport where you go over colored jumps in a ring and you're trying to get around the course as fast as possible with time and faults. So no time, fastest time with the least amount of faults wins. And I grew up in a small town in southern Alberta where there's a lot of rodeo and cowboys. It's a real farming community. I fell in love with horses through a friend. My mom was quite strict and said, no way is my young girl growing up around cowboys. So if you want to ride horses, you've got to do English. And there's different disciplines of English. And for me, the dressage side of things with English wasn't quite as thrilling and exciting enough. So I took to the jumping side of things. And that was when I was 9 years old. So really young. And I did that from 9 years old till I was 26 and went through all the stages of elite sport with show jumping and competed right up to a Grand Prix level. Ended up becoming a assistant trainer quite young to a well-accomplished trainer in Calgary, Alberta. And then branched off and opened up my own stable by the time I was 20 years old and was a young trainer with 30 horses and riders that competed on a national level. And that's what I did. I did that. That was my career. My whole life really was dedicated to that competition arena, literally. Horses was everything. Training horses and then training horses with riders. So there's a lot of evolving parts in that sport. And my motto, if you go on my website, is never die wondering. And because I had grown up in the sport of show jumping, it was a passion and my love. And I certainly could have lived a great life in that industry for the rest of my life. I still love it. But I kind of wondered what else was out there. What else? What else? Is what if and what else? And I got into the fitness a little bit. I ran a little bit of track and field in school. I got into a little bit of lifting weights in the gym, just as a side hobby. I had started running a few 5 and 10Ks with my sister, and the gym that I was going to had some triathletes in it, and they saw me always on the spin bike, and they said, do you know how to swim? And they convinced me to join the local University of Calgary Triathlon Club, and I was sort of doing that is a hobby, but show jumping is a full-time gig, especially when you have your own stable. I mean, it is 24/7. And so I was just loosely dabbling in it starting in 1999. And then I got the bug and I just wondered, I wonder if I could give this a go as far as I was still pretty young, mid-20s. And I wanted to know, I wonder if I could really give this a crack and make something of it. The races I had done had gone quite well. I had been placing in the top three. I had not done an Ironman yet, but I was associated with a really, really great group of people, a world-renowned coach who raised me in the sport, Scott Molina. He's pretty legendary and famous. And I was fortunate enough to have him as my guide right from the beginning. And I said to him, this is what I want to do. What do you think? And he said, let's go for it. And so I sold everything. I sold my business. I had a full-time assistant at that point. I sold my business to my full-time assistant. The clients that I had that were maybe a little above her skill level, I sent back to my old trainer. I closed up shop, got the support of all of my clients, and I packed up my bag and bike box, and away I went for the next 10 years, traveling around the world out of a backpack and a bike box, and went on that professional triathlon journey. And man, was it ever a journey? And I never regret that decision for sure. So not sure if that's the answer you're looking for, but that's the broad paintbrush of that story.
That is the most interesting answer I have ever gotten. Oh my goodness. That was not what I was expecting. Right. Holy smokes. Wait, okay. Now I need to back up a little bit because that was incredible. So you were in your mid-20s, you had built this enormously successful barn with all of these horses. You're training all these people. And then how in the world did you end up with Scott Molina?
Well, in Canada, so because as I started dabbling in triathlon, I immediately became a fan of the sport. I'm a sports fan when I get involved in things and I dive into who's the best. And there's groups of us from Calgary who would go out and watch Ironman Canada and stand and cheer. And I used to watch it and think, holy, good Lord, this is far. Who would ever go this far? That kind of thing. And at the time, people might remember a gal named Lori Bowden, who was just a tremendous long distance triathlete. She won Hawaii.
I am not afraid to say that I have a long standing crush on Lori Bowden, and I have tried for ages to get her to come on this program. I had Heather Feuer on the show, who's good friends with Lori, and unfortunately, Lori has not come on. But yes, go on.
Oh yeah, so you speak my language. Heather Feuer was another one of those. Natasha Badman, those. But in true Canadian roots, I'd go to watch Ironman Canada, and Lori was just. She was a inspiration to me. She was absolutely incredible. I used to watch her and think, oh my God, who could go that far and that fast? And in true Maryland fashion, because I'd been raised in elite sport and I knew how the basic principles and process of becoming elite in sport. And I have a real theory on that once you do something well once, you can apply the same principles to pretty much anything. And you can get yourself on a trajectory that's successful. So one of them was, okay, you find someone who's doing what you want to do really well. And I always look, well, who's the best? And she was one of the best right now. And I reached out to her and she was very friendly. Canadians and triathletes are very friendly. She was very friendly. She told me who her coach was at the time, which was Scott Molina. And I reached out to him. And you never know, you might do these reach outs and no one ever replies. It could be a big black hole that you reach out to. But fortunately, Lori did reply. She knew who I was from the little bit of racing that I'd been already doing. Scott replied when I reached out to him and I told him that I found him through being with her. And it just sort of went from there. And so I think those steps are important, right? Like they say with anything, when you're trying to find a mentor and you're trying to be good at something, as you find out who is the best in it. And then you got to take a gamble on yourself and reach out to those people, or at least try and get as close to the mentors that you admire and say, how do you do this? You're obviously really great at this. And so how do you do this? And I wasn't, and I'm still not afraid to take that approach. And I think that what's the worst that can happen, right? Someone says no, or they just don't answer. And so I think that was really just important. And I was fortunate that they replied.
I'm just going to say that I'm very familiar with both of those other outcomes because I get a lot of no's or not answers, but you really, I'm very impressed. That's pretty great story. So you at in your mid-20s, I mean, I guess that's the age where you're still feeling pretty adventurous and you're not going to kind of like settle into what you have and be, you're most likely to take a risk like that. And obviously, it paid off. I mean, you were able to fund what the next X number of years that you could travel and train and become the athlete that you were, which is really phenomenal. That's just a great story. Yeah, I love it. Tell me about professional cycling.
Yeah, so when I did get into triathlon at the very first stages, again, in my nature, I would find things like where can I find the biggest improvements? And in Canada, there was always this cycling group. There was some Canadian cycling coaches that they would run a camp in Penticton. And Dan Prue, who is still really big on the Canadian cycling side of things, he was back then as well involved with the National Federation. He ran these great cycling and triathlon camps in Penticton. And so I signed up for one of them. And I thought this will be a great way to really elevate my learning curve and my cycling. And again, find places to go that you're going to learn as much as you can and throw yourself in the mix. And so I found that camp. I went to it. And at the time, there was a professional men's team called 7-Eleven. I'm dating myself with all of these names and teams and stuff, but people can look them up if they want. There was a rider on that team. His name was Ron Heyman. He joined the camp. And Dan, at the time, was just putting a women's team together out of Victoria called Opus. It was a professional women's team. And when I went to that camp and they saw me ride, I was really new to the sport, obviously. And they said, would you ever consider doing professional bike racing? And I said, well, sure. I mean, I didn't really know what it was, to be honest. I was like, yeah, sure, I guess so. And so they took a little gamble on me and they put me on that women's Opus team, took me to California to help develop me, teach me the skills, put me in races. And so the story went on from there is that I really took to bike racing. I really liked it a lot. But I love triathlon as well. And so it became basically to this day, since the early 2000s, a balancing act of, and I used to write about a lot of doing professional bike racing as well as long distance triathlon. There really isn't a whole lot of people that do that. And there certainly wasn't back then. There's always a battle between triathletes and bike racers, number one. And neither one really understood each other's sport. And let alone if you ran, it was hard to have that top end to bike race well. If you were just the two sports, they said just couldn't intertwine with one another in so many levels. And I made it work. I was never going to be someone who won any of the great big bike races because I did long distance triathlon. And that's where my bread and butter was. I was placing in the top three in all my Ironmans and half Ironmans for a number of years. That was my bread and butter and where my focus was, but I could do all the big women's bike races on the national road calendar through the US as well in Australia and New Zealand. And I could be a good worker on the team. I could be a player in the mix on a state level. I certainly could win criteriums, time trials and win races on a state level. And then on a national and world level, I could be a good worker and just in the mix and be a contributing person on the team. So I loved both of them, and triathlon became my bread and butter, but the bike racing was still a passion and a love, and so I was able to balance the two really nicely.
Did you ever race the Ironman in Kona?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, I did that. I did it a couple of times. I did it once as a professional, and my swim was my Achilles heel. I really struggled on the swim, and with Scott, his main thing is when you race professionally, you needed to be making a living. And so you needed to make professional choices as far as what was going to give you the biggest paycheck. And for me, I went there and I was dreadfully slow in the water, which I was really exposed in a race like Kona. I rode very well, rode myself, I think, up into fourth off the bike. I jumped off and fourth off the bike. I stayed in the top 10 all the way until I came out of the energy lab and then just exploded out there. And just, I don't remember even what I placed in the 20th or something. And we basically decided as the team, coach athlete team, that it wasn't worth me racing Kona until I could get my swim in a place that I could truly be competitive for that top 10. I was better off to go do a later season race like Ironman Western Australia or Ironman Canada or one of the later season Ironmans where I knew I could potentially win or be top three. And when you're doing it for a living, that's where all the prize money was, all the sponsor bonuses were, and so that financially as a professional was the right choice for me. So I never did go back to Kona again because my swim never did get to the point where it was competitive enough. And then the sport did what sport's supposed to do. It got faster and faster, so which is great. That's what you want to see. And so that never became part of my long-term story as far as Kona went.
Everything went fine until the energy lab. I seem to recall that being a very similar sentiment that I had, as well as many others that I know. So,
right. Not alone. Oh my God. I fizzle faded out there. And I've been.
All right, let's fast forward a little bit. Tell me about Marilyn Chikota Coaching. And I love your logo. So you definitely have to spend a little time telling me the story of your logo, because it's not just the logo that I love, but it's the fact that it's got a story.
Ah, thank you. Yeah. So I've been a coach my whole life. Like I said, I had the show jumping stable. So in show jumping, I started teaching some form of sport when I was a child, really alongside the trainers and day camps. And so as I evolved through triathlon, I knew I wanted to give back to the sport, and coaching was my passion. And it's literally coaching is what I've done my whole life. And so as I was coming towards the end of my career at racing professionally, I got very well connected with a great, great group of people, Gordo Byrne and the Endurance Corner group. They're like family to me. They took me under their wing. And for 12 years, I worked under the Endurance Corner banner. And so all of us worked independently, but under that banner and as a team, Gordo Byrne, Justin Dare, Alan Cousins, there were several others that came and went under that banner that are just amazing, amazing coaches, athletes, and humans all together. And so just great mentors, great friends, great resources, people that guided me through not only the business side of things, but coaching and so many opportunities. And Scott was part of that as well. And so from there, as 12 years goes by, that's a long time, and everyone was sort of getting to a point where they wanted different things for their life. They asked me, because I had sort of the biggest hand in things at that time when they were all starting to want to transition, they asked me if I wanted to purchase the brand. It didn't make sense for me to purchase the brand. And it wasn't for sale for anybody else. They said, we will sell this to you or maybe one other person in the group, but other than that, it will just remain as it is, and we'll... And they encouraged me. They said, Marilyn, you're ready. Like, go out on your own. You need to do this. And like I say, they're all still to this day mentors and good people in my life. And I'll be honest, I was terrified. I didn't know if I could do it without them. This was a group that really, we did this together for a long, long time. And I was like, man, I don't know if I can do this on my own without you. And they said to me, they said, we will have your back. And anything you don't know, we will continue to teach you. And we will push you and we're here for you. And every single one of them was. And we did that transition really nicely. I started MCC and they had my back. They still do to this day if I needed them, but I need them less and less. Usually I ask Gordo like investing questions now in my mid-40s more than I do about business on triathlon. But yeah, so I started it it's gone great. They were right. I couldn't have asked for any better. It's been amazing. Being raised under them, it forced me right from the start. I just had a really great foundation, and I have great clients and athletes that I work with. And when I was looking for a logo, I wanted something that meant something to me. And how that came about, it's funny. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know. It was like one of those all-nighter stressors where you're working away like crazy. And I was plugging in a whole bunch of words into Google that meant something to me, that represented either me as a person, my life, my story, different things like that. And as I was plugging it in, images were popping up. And the one image that popped up was the AF Fern. So if you put in AF Fern and you Google that, and it's on my site as well, it comes up with a little description of what the AF Fern means. And I read it and I went, that's it. That's me. That's my group. That's what we represent. We represent a team, a tribe of people that endure and outlast. And if you read through it, it's just, it just hit home. And I sent it to a designer and they made the logo and I was like, yep, that's it. That's what I want. So.
That's great. I love that story. And you've now been going for a little while. I've spoken to many people who've been to your excellent camps that you put on every spring. I gather that one's coming up. They usually do that in March, I think, right?
It's actually coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend. It's last week of February, first week of March. And again, this Tucson, so I, again, started doing camps with Endurance Corner way, way back. I mean, I've been doing camps since I started the sport, but I started this Tucson camp as part of it with the Endurance Corner. I inherited the camp from Endurance Corner and then have kept it running. So this will be 17 years in a row that this camp has been going. And I never wanted to do it alone. This isn't a project that I want to do alone. So as the Endurance Corner people sort of, they retired from wanting to do this anymore, I brought in Jesse Vondrachak, and him and I, that's who we do. I do the 99% podcast with. We do a lot of work projects together. So we do the camp together. We do the podcast together. And yeah, it's always the last week of February, first week of March. Big, big week. We have so much fun. I have people that have been coming to this camp for almost every single one, and they develop friendships that last a lifetime. Like some of them, they've been friends for over 10 years from coming to the camps, and they just have a blast. We train hard, we play hard, we have a lot of fun. It's just, it's really, really a great week. They stay connected all year. They meet up at races. Even last year, you mentioned one of the people that you have talked to who knew me, Benny. She was at our camp last year, and she's just got slotted right into the family. She's friends with a handful of the camp athletes that have come for years and years in a row, and they met up at every race, and they would send photos, and I just love that. It's just like, we have a group WhatsApp, and usually after events, if you have a group WhatsApp, the WhatsApp dies after a while and just closes. And this one's still active. It's still going. It's going to be, we're already into the next year's camp, and that one's still active from last year. So it's special. It's something that I really love doing, and feel lucky to have these people come back every year for it. That's for sure.
That's awesome. I understand you had some personal adversity last fall. And this is something that a lot of triathletes deal with from time to time. Fortunately, not to quite the dramatic fashion that you did, but as you will hear in a moment when Marilyn tells her story. But many of us as triathletes, we go through injuries. And when we do, it's really difficult to allow ourselves the time and the grace to heal before we start getting back to things. So would you tell us what happened to you last fall, and tell us how you have managed to deal with the mental how tough it is mentally when you can't train, and then how you've come back.
So you're referring to the crash that I had, correct?
Yes, I am.
So that was just 9 weeks ago.
Holy smokes. I thought it was further back than that. Okay. Well, tell us how you've managed over the last 9 weeks.
I know. So that's the part. The reason I wanted to say that is because this is a really important part of this story, is that as athletes, we recover so differently than what other people might expect. And everybody's going to recover a little different. So I was on a group ride. I wasn't doing anything that I don't do every single weekend. I haven't done for the last over 20 years, doing a group ride. It's a safe group of riders. It's a competitive group ride here in Tucson. Was doing the same things that I do every weekend. I'm kind of a sprinter, pardon me, on the bikes. There's a really fast sprint on this group ride where there's a real fast downhill and then it flattens out. And so afterwards, of course, I looked at my Garmin to see how fast we're going. And we're going 45 miles an hour, which is a pretty common speed to be going after that downhill and as you're leading out for that sprint. And I was in the lead out train, and just the last thing I remember seeing is someone coming in from the left, and they bumped me. And when they bumped me, we started bumping back and forth. They're a little bit bigger guy. We're going very fast. And so that combination of things, I just went flying. I don't really remember anything after the person coming in from the left. I just remember bump, bump, bump. And then, you know, wake up on the road. And I thought I was fine. Or so from, I don't know if it's just we're trained to assume that we're fine. And some of us are, everybody's different on how they handle those kinds of things. I have been falling, like you said, you're an ER doctor. I've been falling off horses since I've been 9 years old. I've crashed off bikes a lot, bike racing. So it's not something that freaked me out. It's not my nature anyways. I don't really get sort of dramatic and freaked out very easily anyways, good or bad. I don't know. That sometimes works for you and sometimes it works against you. So I thought it was fine. I literally just caught an Uber home. In the Uber, I realized things were really bad, that it wasn't, I wasn't good. And by the time I got home, I was in pretty bad shape as far as I could breathe out, but I couldn't breathe in. And I was in so much pain, I could basically just stand in one spot. Called some friends. They took me to the ER. When they took me in the ER, they did an X-ray and they wanted to go crazy with everything, all kinds of scans. Of course, they hear 45 mile an hour crash on a bike. They wanted to scan everything, head, neck, internal, like everything. This is where a lot of lessons were learned, is I said, no, hold up. Like insurance in the US, those kinds of things. I was like, I think I just have a couple broken ribs. I'm okay. Like, and they're giving you IV pain meds. And so I have quite a high pain tolerance already. I'm not really feeling much. Said, I'm okay.
You can't see my face, but I'm making the face of an emergency physician who's hearing this story and going, oh no, don't get the scans.
And I didn't. I went home and an X-ray doesn't tell a whole story. And especially, I don't think it was a good X-ray. So what they didn't find was that from an X-ray, and it was my fault. I went home. In the end, so as I walked around for a whole week and things obviously got progressively worse and breathing got harder and harder and symptoms increased more and more, I had 3 broken ribs and a punctured lung. And because of that, the lung collapsed completely over a week. I had that like crackle skin and all through my back and my neck and breathing, just sitting around, I sounded like I'd run a 5K and I was like, this isn't right. Like, I was living my normal life. That's the thing, as athletes, we think, well, something seems off, but I think I'm okay. I was trying to spin on my bike on the trainer. That wasn't going well, obviously. I was trying to live normal life and I was like, something's not right.
Nothing, no splenic injuries or liver injuries though.
No. And so I went.
Fortunately.
I had a friend who was a doctor and he sent me something's not right. And he sent me for a follow-up X-ray, got the X-ray. As soon as he got the X-ray, he called me. He said, Marilyn, you need to go to the ER like right now. And I was like, what? And he's like, no, you need to go immediately. And I was like, hang on, let me take a shower. I was like, well, I'm walking around like this for a week. I think this is going to take a minute. At least let me have a snack and a shower. So I go up to the ER. They redo the X-ray. Of course, they find the lungs completely collapsed and they do everything just sort of went from there. And they put a chest tube in, plated the lung back up. I was in the ER overnight. Then I was in the hospital for 4 days. Everything healed great. Just as I was a doctor, it takes the 4 days for all the fluids to drain and then the lung to stay inflated and the hole to heal and all of those things. And then they sent me home and gave me specific instructions. I have a really great, he was part of the Endurance Corner crew as well. Dr. Jeff Schilt, he works with a lot of athletes, sports medicine doctor, really great connection. He had had this injury. He's known me my whole life as an athlete. And I got in touch with him. He gave me some guidelines to go by because he knows that when you leave, they say, well, let pain be your guide. And they're like, well, hang on a second. This is obviously not a very good guide for this person because our interpretation of pain as athletes, we're used to being really uncomfortable and we're used to what is necessarily pain to someone else is just like, it's not, we all interpret it differently. And depending on what you've been through in your life, your interpretation of actual pain can be different. And that's not the same for even every athlete. For me, it wasn't a good guide. For me, the indicators were I can't breathe. So I can't breathe was my indicator, not I'm in pain, because people say, well, 3 ribs is pretty painful. And I said, yeah, it was pretty uncomfortable if I sneezed or something for sure and getting in and out of bed. But to me, I was like, this is an expected amount of pain. So yeah, so recovery's gone great. I was very, again, the common theme with me as a human being is I was very proactive, contacted the right people, contacted a coach that had been through this, contacted a doctor, obviously Dr. Jeff Schilt, who'd been through this, my doctors that here that I knew I needed to see follow-ups, got a really good proactive plan right from the start. And as soon as I could, I started following the plan to get myself back. And I'm only 9 weeks post-crash, and I would say I'm back to full. I still a little bit sometimes if I take a big deep breath, it feels not quite like I can feel a balloon. I still cough a little bit. I still have a tiny bit of like tightness in a couple of ribs in certain things. But other than that, I'm back on the group rides. I'm back weightlifting. I'm back doing.
All right. Clearly, I asked the wrong person this question. Because what I wanted to hear was, oh, it was hard, it was difficult, but these are the things that I employed to get through the difficult times of waiting to heal. No, yeah, you got on your bike with a pneumothorax.
It was, but here's the thing. I think the important lesson in all that is that it's the approach and the mentality, right? Like people said to me the first time I came back on a group ride. So there's baby steps to it, right? The first group ride I went back on was a very small group of safe riders that I knew they don't ride aggressively in a race manner. And I just followed some wheels for half of it. So mentally, I was like, all right, I'm going to put myself around people right away. I have the attitude of, you have to decide at a certain point when you have an accident like that, do I still want to do this? And if the answer is no, that's okay. You don't have to. Nobody's forcing you to do this. So if the answer is no, that's all right. That's your answer. That's up to you. But if the answer is yes, I still want to do this, then you need to go ahead and just take the steps accordingly to put yourself back in a position to do that. And that doesn't mean just throwing yourself in too deep too quickly, because that can be really terrifying and can even delay the process because now you're even more scared than you were. However, if you go with the idea, like I'm making this choice, this is definitely something I want to do, and you take steps to doing that. So like I say, first step was, you know, I rode the trainer for the first period of time. Once I got cleared from the doctors to go back out on the road, I did a little bit on my own on the road. Once I was comfortable with that, I went to a very safe group for half of it. That was about mentally what I could handle. Then I did that again, but for the whole ride. Then I went to a little bit more peppy, spicy, racy type group, did half of it again. Then another week went by where I took a little break from that, went out on my own. And then I went back on like a very, very spicy group ride where I know it's a safe group that I really like. And everyone there is my friend and they knew what had happened to me. And so I had lots of support around me. And I wouldn't be lying if I didn't say I wasn't a little spooked. Of course I was. But every time I felt that tension or felt a little nervous, I made sure I was around people that I knew what I had been through, and they were very kind to me. And I just said, follow the wheel in front of you, look ahead, stay relaxed, and got myself through it. And then you just build time and repetition with that confidence and those baby steps of being around that. And then the more success you have on that, then all of a sudden you realize you're relaxed again and you're like, okay, I'm back to myself again. I still feel a little spooked if I see bikes moving around, especially from the left, but I will relax into it and say like, you're okay. And just look forward and ahead. And so I think, yeah, it's hard for sure. There's no doubt. It's not like, oh, you're just like this wave of magic wand person who doesn't go through all that. Of course. And physically, was it uncomfortable? Of course. I mean, you know, when you're in pain and you also take a little bit of time off, you take steps backwards in your fitness. That's hard mentally. You're in pain already. So you're managing that however it is that you feel pain, but it's still there. You're also removed from your normal routine and your friends and all of the things. So you have to watch yourself emotionally and mentally that you don't go down any rabbit holes and set up good guardrails to make sure that you stay on track as far as environment and people and mental energy and all of those things. So I think those are important and they're definitely intentional steps to make sure that if you go through this kind of thing, that you, number one, get on it right away, all of those. And then no matter how you feel, just keep showing up for each one of them. And then before you know it, you grab this traction and you're okay. And then you're someone who's like 9 weeks and everyone's like, holy crap, you were in the hospital 9 weeks ago and you look great. And it was all very intentional. Every step was intentional to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, I think the intentionality of it is really the most important piece. With the last couple of minutes that we have, I'd love to hear a little bit about the 99% podcast. Tell us about it. Tell us what people can expect to hear when they start listening.
Yeah, I would love it. Thank you for that. So you can find all the episodes we've done so far. If you go to my site, mcc.coach, go to podcast, you can find a lot of interviews that I've done there, as well as all of our 99%. You can also find the 99% on all of the streams. So you can find it there. Like I said, my good friend and business partner as far as we do projects together, Jesse Von Der Tak, he came to me with this idea. So he's the lead on that project. I'm the lead on the camps. He's the lead on the podcast. He came to me and said, hey, I have this idea. I would love for you to be a part of it. I know that we work really well together. And I love the idea of people in our industry connecting and sharing ideas and supporting one another and having those conversations. The coaching world can be a bit of a lonely world, and it doesn't need to be. It's a profession where we can support each other and we can all help each other grow and continue to learn from one another and not feel like it's competition. Jesse and I have a great working relationship that way in different projects. So he came to me with this. He said, this is my idea. I'd like yourself and another coach named Elliot Bassett to be a part of it. And so we just started it and we committed to the first year. Our commitment was we'll do two episodes. At first it was, we need to do an episode a week, every single week for a full year. And then we realized that that probably wasn't going to be our audience that frequently. So we went to bi-weekly and after a full year, but we committed the full year. And then we've just gained traction and episodes since then. And we really just to get together and talk about all the different aspects of training and triathlon and the things that really matter as far as like you could take a broad paintbrush and make yourself better as a triathlete and have important coaching conversations. Well, often when we're, you know, coming up with ideas, think, okay, as two coaches, what are the two biggest conversations we keep having right now with athletes? Let's talk about that so other people and our athletes can learn off of this. And hopefully people listen to it and they can take that either they're not coached and forward in their training, but also the athletes that we train, that they get a deeper insight to some of the things that we tell them or want to talk to them about, that they learn a little bit off of it. So we just feel like those are important conversations to have out there.
All right. That's great. Well, I will have links to all of Marilyn's different places you could find her website, the podcast, and everything else that'll be in the show notes. Marilyn Chikota, I can't thank you enough for joining me on the podcast today. This has been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. Congratulations on your super comeback. Very, very quick. And good luck with the camp that's coming up.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
And that's it for another episode. The TriDoc Podcast is produced and edited by me, Jeff Sankoff, along with my interns.
I'm Agent Johnson. This is Special Agent Johnson.
Oh, how you doing?
No relation.
I'm Jeff Sankoff, the TriDoc. I'm in charge here.
Not anymore.
Those interns are Ian Johnson and Ben Johnson. You can find the show notes for everything discussed on the show today, as well as archives of previous episodes at TriDocPodcast.com. Do you have questions about any of the issues discussed on this episode, or do you have a question that you'd like for me to consider answering on a future episode? Send me an email at tri_doc@icloud.com, or join the private TriDoc Podcast Facebook group on Facebook, and you can submit your questions there. If you're interested in coaching services, please visit tri.coaching.com or lifesportcoaching.com, where you can find a lot of information about me and the services that I provide. You can also follow me on the TriDoc Podcast Facebook page, TriDoc Coaching on Instagram, and the TriDoc Coaching YouTube channel. If you enjoyed this podcast, I hope that you'll consider leaving me a rating and a review, as well as subscribe to the show wherever you download it. And of course, there's always the option of becoming a supporter of the podcast at patreon.com/TriDocPodcast. The music heard at the beginning and the end of the show is Radio by Empty Hours and is used with permission. This song and many others like it can be found at ReverbNation.com, where I hope that you'll visit and give small independent bands a chance. The TriDoc Podcast will be back again soon with another medical question for me to answer and another interview with someone in the world of multisport. Until then, remember 1121 and train hard, train healthy.